Welcome to the 22nd episode of Who's Editing, a thought experiment in which my guest and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on us because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact, must use them. I'll let you in on all the rules, but first, my guest with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who number 22. Guys, it's the Superman issue, so it all comes back to Michael Bailey. Welcome to the show, Master Bailey.
Thank you. I am very happy. I was very touched that you thought of me for this one.
Who else? Of course, we had to get you for Superman, but it doesn't mean it was easy, necessarily, because you read so much Superman, as have I, that it's kind of hard to, I don't know, reinvent the wheel. We may not have to. Were there challenges to this issue? I mean, if Superman's
easy...
Oh, yeah. I don't know if Superman's easy, but the rest of the issue...
Superman, as listed, Superman 2, but in reality, Superman 3, no matter what the man will... How does Alan Middleton say it? No matter what big comic tells you.
Right.
he was a little difficult. Superman 1 wasn't. Like, his hit me like a bolt from the blue. And I gotta say, Strongbow and Super Chief, I was just staring at them going, how the heck am I gonna do this? I think I figured my way out of it. And maybe a little bit with Star Hunters and the first Starfire, because I've never read a single issue. They are Who's Who characters to me.
Mm-hmm.
They do not exist in the comic book world. They exist with a surprint and a lot of text.
I spent all my space opera ideas on the previous episode. There was a lot of them here. So that seemed to be a challenge for me. But I think I cracked it. No, I'll tell you my strategy a little later.
Okay.
But one more time, before we get there, are the rules. Each episode of Who's Editing goes by. Our line of books must include a monthly series for every hero, character, or team featured, as well as any non-HQ location. We can give a villain or other entry their own series if we absolutely feel the need to, but we can only name a single villain from the issue to receive that honor. So imagine we're coming back from some crisis or other, so we can reboot characters, we can use any continuities version, we can repurpose IP, you know, just same name, different character. It's up to us. Titles don't have to match the entries, and note that each of us is pitching our own ideas, so we'll sort of end up with two possible lines of books. And listeners, you decide which books you actually want to read, and we'll also play that game. We'll have just enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line. All right. So tell me, Michael, did you have a strategy going into this?
Yes, and that was basically to kind of take the concept or the character and change it pretty significantly somehow. Whether that is taking the character and putting them into another time period, taking a character into the future, or into the past, or just kind of taking the concept, especially as presented in Who's Who, and just going, okay, I'm going to go in a really different direction on this, with a sub-strategy of what would sound best as a 1970s television show.
Okay. That's interesting. Sounds like it's going to be fun. For me, I kind of joked about this with you beforehand, and at the time I was half serious, and then I became quite serious about it. I'm taking your phrase, it all comes back to Superman, to heart. So right now, someone might well be warranted in thinking the DC universe is based on Batman. I don't know, you may have different opinions, but when you look at the line that DC is really putting out, maybe the world is kind of dark and grim and Batman-y. And I ask, what if it was based on Superman instead? So I've rebooted the DC universe somewhat, and our Superman is the post-crisis Superman up through the current era. But the twist is that every book has a link to Superman or to Superman lore. So I call the initiative Rocketed, and there'll be a nice classic Kryptonian baby space capsule in the logo for the first few months of it. Well, I hope I do you proud as a Superman fan.
Well, that's a really cool idea. I don't even know if I could do that. And I'm really good at connecting things to Superman.
That's true. And I don't know if I can do that. So we'll see. We'll see how well I did. With issue 22 of Who's Who, we have to include a minimum of 17 books in our line and a maximum of 18. So I'm going to hand it off to you first, and we'll do a bit of back and forth in entry order, and we'll keep our bonus villain series, if we have one, for the end. So you said kind of tough on the original Starfire.
Yeah.
Fantasy, sci-fi fantasy character. What do you have for us?
So I'm going to take the character, and we're going to transport her story 15 years into the future as she and her daughter, whose father was Dagon, because Dagon is mentioned in the Who's Who listing and he died, but nothing to say that she didn't get pregnant before that. And this is a little inspired by Rob Kelly's reaction to this entry.
Okay.
Because his reading of the last sentence of this has stuck with me in the way he goes, or the Yorg. So basically, they're going to launch into their final battle against the Mygorg with their new allies, the Yorg. So the old enemy becomes an ally, and they go after another enemy.
For me, well, the story starts in the Superman books. Luthor retro-engineers a Kryptonian space capsule. Lois Lane accidentally falls for a trap meant for Superman and is rocketed off Earth through a space warp and to a planet with a red sun, one that has a mix of magic and sci-fi as described in this entry. So she takes the name Starfire, inspired by the new Titan, who was part of that aforementioned Superman story. We'll find out. And she spends a year in science fantasy stories, learning all the martial arts, all the martial skills necessary, and realizing her full potential as a badass. So don't worry, Superman fans. She returns at the end of the year, at which point Lois and Clark are reunited, and the series might go on with Lois picking up the sword and the laser gun to help Metropolis on occasion, though probably the series would, you know, its hooks would be more journalism-based. I'm titling this series Lois Lane, Mightier Than the Pen.
I love that.
The insanity begins. So let me pivot to Starfire 2, which I've already mentioned. In that Superman storyline that rocketed Lois away, there's also a big reveal that Tamaran and Krypton are cousin planets. See, ancient Scions had transplanted Kryptonian DNA into the primitive Tamaranian people, which is why their cells can also absorb solar energy, albeit for different effects. Starfire is deeply impacted by this information, and when Superman loses his wife, well, she decides to stay in Metropolis and stick by him, console him, and though it wasn't part of the plan, she falls in love with him. So she'll be a supporting character in Superman, but he'll be a supporting star in her book, which will be, you know, strong superhero action, but also have her deal with those complicated, unrequited, and frankly, unrequitable feelings. When Lois returns, Starfire will hang around for a while, but she'll soon have to find a new status quo to forget the Man of Steel. And despite these changes, it should feel a lot like the Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor series, their take on the character, and I totally bring them back as writers. That's my Starfire, too. How about yours?
As I said, kind of changing the paradigm, but sticking with maybe a 70s, maybe 80s television. Charlie's Angels, but with Starfire, where Danny chases Bosley. Under the guise of being a model, Corey goes on missions and takes down the bad guys. Pretty much by herself, but it's with Danny Chase just to piss everybody off.
She's sort of the Farrah Fawcett. And, well, you could do, I don't know, I feel like the other Titans could be like the other angels.
Oh, you could definitely have like Raven and Donna in there with her.
Yeah, totally.
There's nothing saying that that can't happen. But she would be kind of the leader of the group because it would be her title.
Right. Starfire's Angels.
Yes.
Let's stay with the star motif for a while, actually. And Star Hawkins is next.
So sitcom meets 70s Private Eye type show. Star Hawkins is living a decent life as the head of the Academy of Robot Detection when he is suddenly framed for the murder of one of his students. So he finds himself on the run with Ilda and Automan trying to solve the murder, with Hawkins getting in the way as much as helping.
Oh, I like that. I really like that. I like that. It's like an arc. It's a little bit of The Fugitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's got robots. Yeah, yeah. For me, this is the hard-boiled private detective comic. It's set in Metropolis, the Metropolis of the mid-2000s. Not that millennium, but that decade. Because in the mid-2000s, you know, remember, like, Metropolis looked futuristic. It had a science police.
Yep.
So it's that Metropolis. And if there's science police, there has to be science crime. And Star Hawkins gets involved in that kind of stuff. Basically, the strange impact of the tech, with a capital T, what it's left on the normal citizens of the city after it was transformed by that combined Kryptonian and Brainiac technology that altered the city. Ilda, the robot secretary, is one of the results of the tech, but it's also given rise to weird drugs, intergang shenanigans, and new techno crimes that no one's ever thought to codify. So we'll explore that here. It's more a Metropolis is kind of the central character of this, even though Star Hawkins is our lead.
I like that too. I wasn't a really big fan of that era, but
right.
If you're going to do something with it, that's a great concept to go with.
The same thing. I was sort of trying to salvage elements of the Superman stories that didn't necessarily appeal to me at the time. I'm more of a, you know, 90s triangle era kind of guy for Superman. Yeah. All right. Star Hunters. Oof. Well, this is the first of three space opera crews in this issue. So I'm setting Star Hunters in the future when humanity and other cultures have found the remains of Krypton and are using the asteroid field as a playground. Well, it seems that kryptonite is an incredible fuel source, but there are veins of different colors that have different powers, including the ability to give humans and perhaps others superpowers. So the Star Hunters have been lucky enough to be exposed to such ore, and they each have one of the Kryptonian powers, at least up to a point, and they use them to fight ruthless mining concerns. They're kind of space corsairs. They're keeping their space lanes free of pirates and such. So this is going to be a swashbuckling book with a strong Flash Gordon vibe.
So this is my laziest one, and okay. I'm going to fully admit to that. Star Hunters, the Next Generation.
Okay.
That's it. That's the pitch. You have the son of Dr. McGavin, who apparently died. What 70s science fiction parody movie is this original concept from? They named the villain group the Corporation? Really? So basically, it's a new generation of Star Hunters fighting the Corporation, with a dude's son as their leader. And one of them, I don't care who, it could be, what is the name here? Dr. Bruce Sellers shows up in the first episode to tell them that, you know, to say, take care of the ship because she'll always get you home.
And off we go. I like that there's a 70s vibe to all your things. So I can now imagine what that also would feel like.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get back to superheroes.
Yes.
Starman, the original Starman here. So we get two Starmen to play with.
So Starman 1, similar origin, Ted Knight develops a gravity rod, but transport it back to the late 1800s and make everything from the costume to the tech steampunk. So the Mist is a steampunk character. Instead of being somebody that transforms into mist, he's got like a flying airship that puts a fog out over people. It is open for having like other JSA characters show up in steampunk, but I really want to see like Ted Knight steampunk with his gravity rod. I don't know if they're going to put him in like the top hat and the goggles and what that rod would look like, but when it hit me, it was like this really, like one of the most primal experiences of this entire thing. Like this felt right. Like why hasn't somebody done this already almost?
In a way, aesthetically, it's a little bit like the Jack Knight stuff, you know, the goggles and the, there was a sort of vibe, you know, to Opal City that was not steampunk, but you know, Art Deco, it was something.
It was basically like whatever steampunk's cousin is.
Deco punk.
Yeah, deco punk. That's actually, okay, there you go. That is what it was.
I mean, I was inspired by that, by James Robertson's series as well, because I say as well, because I don't think that necessarily was your trigger, but now that we're talking about it, you know, there's a similarity there. I call my book Starman Legacy, and the connection to Superman is that in this revised continuity, Krypton's explosion was what Ted Knight was watching in the sky, and from where he detected a new form of radiation and adapted his rod to channel and later manufacture it. So it's in fact deadly to Kryptonians, which has made Opal City, where, you know, cosmic rods and staves have been used extensively, a lethal zone for Superman and Supergirl. So Luthor has moved many of his businesses to Opal City, which in turn has activated the Knight family. there's stuff going on. This is a book that evokes James Robertson's Starman with lots of opportunity to tell stories from the past, starring all the people who have been called Starman. And if Robinson's series was about nostalgia, this one is what happens when people disrespect the past, when they erase it. Gentrification, that kind of stuff. With Luthor acting as a futurist from Metropolis who is destroying Opal's heritage. Like, he doesn't see the point of the old-fashionedness of that city. So I'm still throwing a spin on nostalgia in there, but Ted Knight is part of the series, but he's not necessarily the main Starman. You know, there's plenty to choose from.
And I like the concept of a hero that Superman can't really be around at all, or he'll die.
Yeah. but it means that, you know, so Luthor thinks it's a playground, but he's going to learn that that's not true. All right, Starman number 2. It's Prince Gavin I could have picked any other Starman, obviously, but I went with him. This was the last one I cracked. I don't think any of them were particularly difficult for me this time around because I had such a good hook with the Superman links. But Prince Gavin was the last one that I figured out. And maybe the link is a little weak. You tell me. Mongol, right? Mongol is a Superman villain. And he's mentioned in this entry. And it inspired my idea for a War World comic. That's the name of it, War World. It stars Prince Gavin, because it turns out Gavin pulled a Silver Surfer when War World came to his system, and he agreed to become a slave and a gladiator for Mongol in exchange for Throne World's survival. With his stellar powers, he's become a star of the show. He's fighting hundreds of duels for Mongol and his clients who get broadcast, or people even attend these matches. He becomes a mentor for younger gladiators, gets involved in their stories. He's often outplaying Mongol and leading a secret resistance. I think it's a bit like the recent War World storyline in the Superman books. And as an extra wrinkle, Gavin had a son before leaving, who is now old enough to have taken the throne, become king, but his first order of business is to get his father back, if only he can convince his people that it's worth doing and that it's safe for the planet. So there's this political subplot going on as well, and eventually a reckoning between War World and Throne World, which is kind of mentioned in this entry that there's a link between these two planets who just don't know how to name themselves properly. And so I sort of hung my story on that.
So I went in a similar direction as the Will Payton series.
Oh.
Instead of the energy being drawn to the Earth, Prince Gavin is transported to the Earth. And now he is on the run from the government and that ugly scientist guy that was trying to kill Will Payton through the first part of his series, as he tries to find a way to return home.
Okay, he's sort of been Adam Stranged.
Yeah, kind of opposite, but... And then I realized, I almost like said he's got a kid on the planet, but then I realized that is way too much like the actual Starman television series from the 1980s that was based on the movie.
I'm not sure that's a minus.
Where Ted Stryker was Spider-Man's dad.
Yeah.
No, but it hit me. I was just like, because I kind of liked the idea. I wasn't like totally on board with it when James Robinson revealed that Will Payton basically got Prince Gavin's essence, essentially. I was like, I felt that like took a little away from Will Payton. But then again, the first time we see Will Payton in that series, he's on an alien planet being tortured, so...
Yeah, the series wasn't kind to him. He was sort of like the forgotten Starman.
The way I see it is that the cover to the first issue is Steve Ditko drawing, like, Starman on the run as he's being chased by a bunch of floating heads, because it's Ditko, and he's really good with that.
Everybody's got a trick to not do feet.
Yes.
Our last star entry is the Star Rovers. What do you have for us with the Star Rovers?
Yeah, I was just like, yay. So I decided to go in an socially aware direction where Carol, Rick, and Homer realize their lifestyle has come at the expense of ignoring the social inequities across the known galaxies. So now they use their personalized spaceships to help those that the system has left behind, even with that same system trying to stymie them at every turn, but they're still jerks because they get together at the end of the issue and try to compare about who did the best job helping people.
Because they got a neat little hook in there, but, you know, mm-hmm. like from story to story, how does this play out? So for me, well, sometime before Krypton exploded, three Kryptonian astronauts set out to explore their corner of the galaxy. What I think would be a rather ancient corner, where stars are already red giants. So these astronauts never develop superpowers. And one of them is definitely named Kar-El. You know, like the Carol. I mean, that here is a female, but this would be one of the male characters. Kar-El, it's right there. So this would be an uncle of Jor-El's, but they don't have access to Jor-El's later tech, which allowed baby Cal to be rocketed to another world. And at some point, they'll return home, and they tragically discover it's gone. So before that happens, I want some emotionally ironic flashbacks to show what they left behind. To set it apart from Star Hunters, the Star Rovers' adventures are about one culture's first steps in the greater universe, meeting ancient species that are on the tail end of their civilizations. So again, an ironic counterpoint to the fact that their own world is about to be destroyed. Like, this part of space is post-apocalyptic, really. And yet, the idealism of these characters makes things better. We're also going to partake in the original strip's gimmick, where three cocky people split up and each think they solved the problem themselves by making the spaceship able to split into three, and the Kryptonians often splitting up and coming back, etc. So we've got that element to keep, because it's what makes the Star Rovers unique, or else they're just like another cookie-cutter science fiction strip. This time, I'm making them Kryptonian astronauts.
I dig that.
Let's go with Steel. Sorry, Hank Haywood. I'm giving this one to John Henry Irons. Basically, I would fix a lot of what I think went wrong with his own series post-Reign of the Supermen. He needs to keep the big S on his chest, the hammer, etc. Like, that look has never been bettered, or even equaled, in my opinion. He needs to keep John Bogdanov as artist. He needs better villains than the 90s trash that he was saddled with. So we're going to make him the new head of Star Labs, reigning in some of the accidental monsters that have come out of those facilities, basically an excuse to go all over the world and fight villains like the Parasite, or monsters that I think which should register on the Godzilla scale. His Star Labs, in fact, will clash with the mad scientists of Oolong Island, more or less turning Star Labs into a global agency that deals with such problems. When science goes mad, Steel is on the case. Did you keep Hank Haywood?
I did keep Hank Haywood. Okay. I did. Hank Haywood had it all. He was a senior in high school with a bright future, star of the football team, dating the girl he's loved since forever. But a car accident ends all of that. Hank's grandfather has his friend, Dale Gunn, replaced Hank's damaged limbs and organs with bionics. After accepting his new life, Hank helps his grandfather's government agency to take down threats normal law enforcement can't. But the twist? Hank's grandfather is the one that caused the accident so that he could turn his grandson into a weapon.
Oh, the chief. The chief Gambit. Mm-hmm.
Yep, the chief Gambit.
Yep. Well, I mean, he was a jerk in Jail Detroit as well.
Yes, he was.
So I can believe it. Stiletta is our next one. So what do you have?
When Jonah Hex is sent back to the Old West, Stiletta is accidentally brought with him.
Ooh, okay. That's
but separated from him during the process. So now she has to make her way in a primitive world as she seeks to find Hex and somehow get back to her own time.
Okay. A complete reversal of Hex.
Exactly. It was basically just taking the concept, flipping it around, and having basically her encountering characters like Cinnamon and characters like all of the old really cool, because DC has a deep bed of great Western characters.
I agree.
So you could really have her like running into them as she's trying to find Jonah Hex, and no one wants to help her find Jonah Hex because no one likes him. It's almost like a detriment that that's what she's seeking.
Well, Stiletta Furiosa, as I call it, is a post-apocalyptic series, I kept that, in which she's the sole hero, there's no Hex around, driving her motorbike through the great disaster landscape and helping people along the way, like the Lone Ranger, but she's got a quest of her own, and I'm taking a page from the 1990s Elseworlds Commandy stories. She's looking for Superman, who is reputed to have been put into suspended animation by persons unknown and survived the great cataclysm. We'll see various versions of this legend play out. Different people have heard it differently. And the quest will take Stiletta to many places we associate with Superman, like the Fortress of Solitude, what's left of Metropolis and Smallville, perhaps even the JLA's crashed satellite. So we'll get answers, but really this is mostly an excuse to keep her moving.
I like that one too, because I could see her finding like that issue of Commandy where he finds the costume.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking there.
You're really taking this theme and running with it in really cool ways. I just want to say that since we're about halfway through.
I don't think I did so well with Stone Boy. I mean, I don't need a special connection between Superman and Legion characters, right? It's built in. Still, I call this book In Action Comics. Well, it's a comedy about Stone Boy and how he's used as a living statue to save the day by other heroes or normal people or even just Lady Luck. When he wakes up, it's all over. And he doesn't really know what he propped open or rammed with his head. Anyone from the Legion's time could show up as a guest star or a villain, obviously. I'm also willing to drop him down a time warp so he can spend a few issues interacting with contemporary characters. Not sure I would call this an arc, because In Action Comics I think we'll have lots of shorter stories, one-page gags, that kind of thing. I think the art by Richard Bruning here sets the tone for what I'd like to see. Yeah, this is what we want from Stone Boy. Unless you wanted something different.
Mine is a series by Fred Hembeck.
Oh, okay. We're in the same...
Where Dag just tries to live out his normal life, but can't control when and where he turns to stone, and hilarity ensues.
So I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, very much.
That's the closest we've gotten.
So let's turn the page, and it's Stripesy.
After the death of Sylvester Pemberton, Pat Dugan uses the fortune that was left to him to develop a series of mech suits worn by a group of young kids that Pat was working with. And if the battle goes poorly, which it always does, the suits are able to form into the giant robot Stripe.
Okay, so adjacent to Stargirl.
Kind of, yeah, but more of like Stripesy meets the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
For me, I gave Lois a book, right? I gave Steel a book, and that inspired me to create Superboy and Stripesy. Superboy is the teen hero we now refer to as Kal-El. Very much in his 90s, fun-loving, fade haircut, jacket phase. Stripesy is only slightly older in this. He's that famous redhead, Jimmy Olsen, who has been tasked with keeping the kid out of trouble. To be on an even playing field with Superboy and his typical enemies, Jimmy uses a special shirt with stripes, each one containing a different power, which was crafted by the same engineers who made the H-Dial. They basically turn him into Turtle Boy or the Human Porcupine or whatever other weird transformation from Jimmy's past you care to name. So, yeah, he probably causes more trouble than the kid would alone. And he's got the absolutely wrong complexion to spend so much time in Hawaiian sun. But, I mean, this is Carl Kiesel. It's Tom Grummet. They're back to make this fun and full of superhero screw-ups. You can tell when my era of Superman was. All right, let's tackle Strongbow. You had trouble with this. I like the idea of a Native American hero operating before the Europeans set foot on the continent. I like that. But it didn't fit my theme. Not here. So stick around. There's more. So Strongbow is a modern metropolis hero, a Native American archer who came to the big city to track down a mysterious killer who hurt people from his community. He settles in Little America, a neighborhood I've invented for Metropolis where so many Native Americans are living and embracing their culture that the city has given it a special self-governing status. Metropolis is meant to be utopian, after all, right? So I'm quite a fan of a subgenre called Afrofuturism, which tends to reimagine Africa in modern and science fiction terms. And the most mainstream expression is like Wakanda, right? I want to do something like this for Native cultures. Our Native American creative team will be imagining Native values and traditions in an urban environment. What does that mean for Metropolis? And Strongbow allows us to explore this hopefully intriguing place and what is sure to be a dark, gritty, serial killer hunting thriller, you know. Where did you end up?
Strongbow heads north and finds himself mixed up with two factions of Vikings that are battling over a particular settlement. And he aligns himself with one of them to try to more or less mediate the situation. Because one of the things about the Who's Who entry is that he always tried to bring peace.
Right.
So he's trying to do that, but it's an action book, so he ends up fighting.
All right.
So more of a historical drama.
Right. It almost touches on Eric, Son of Thunder.
Yeah.
He was picked up by Vikings. I've got a team up in mind. What about the Suicide Squad?
So you have a group of superpowered criminals that are put into dangerous situations. But when they die, their consciousnesses are transported back in time so that they can try to repeat the scenario until they're able to complete the mission and live.
Groundhog Day, Suicide Squad.
Pretty much. Kind of, what was that movie with Tom Cruise?
It has different names.
Yeah, it's got like 15 different names, but basically... Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow is the original name.
Yeah, something like that, where they're sent in, and they're sent in to die so that they can kind of go back and tweak the situation to see about how they can successfully complete the mission and live, but they remember that they've died like 20 times.
I think there was like a Dr. Light story that kind of went like that, sort of a joke issue. But yeah, okay, that's interesting. I like it. I'm a sucker for time travel stories anyways. Mm. You had me at hello. For me, what was Suicide Squad was only ever truly good when John Ostrander was writing it. I've never read it that it was, like, as good. So he's back. Some old faces, maybe, like Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, Bronze Tiger, they might be back, as well as an unvillainized Amanda Waller, thank you. But instead of always picking off Firestorm villains, which is what he had access to back in the day, Ostrander gets to play with Superman foes of yore. And I do mean yore. Like, yes, he gets to play with Toyman and Atomic Skull and Livewire, of course. But I want to go deep and reintegrate some of the one-off villains from the Bronze Age. Guys you won't recognize, like the Mole, or a Null and Void, which maybe more people might recognize. The Microwave Man, you know, just like these one-offs. We need cannon fodder. But also, who knows who Ostrander can turn into a continuing concern, right? I mean, he's done it before. And by using Superman villains, of course, we can set up a confrontation between the Squad and the Man of Steel. And then who knows where it could go from there, because it's very different from, like, meeting Batman or whatever, right? I'm intrigued at what could happen in a Superman-verse with the Suicide Squad. Up next, Sunboy. Well, this is our second Legion book. I call it Everybody Hates Sunboy. People who listen to A Hot More Not will know that I'm merely doing the girl's bidding in this case. It stars the Levitz era Sunboy, who in the first arc breaks one of the Legion's more persnickety rules, and he's expelled from the team. So he becomes a real playboy. Yeah, he's trading on the Legion's good name, acting like he was never kicked out, but working solo and leaving behind him broken hearts, broken homes, and broken dishes. He's sort of the 30th century's Booster Gold, or Batlash. I think Batlash. Will he save the future or ruin it? You know, I guess both my Legion books are comedies.
Dirk Morgna, private investigator. Thrown out of the Legion, Dirk makes his living as a PI on the mean streets of 30th century suicide slum, occasionally aided out of pity by Dawnstar to help him track things down.
And we sort of aligned on this one. I think everybody thinks Sunboy is going to get kicked out.
Yeah.
It's a better fate than he actually met.
Yeah, no doubt. Yes. Yeah, that 5YL Sunboy story just, whew.
If you think the 5YL, like let's say that's the real future of the Levitz Legion, if you thought that was bad, pick it up once Levitz takes the book over in the retro boot and see, like, his alternate fate. I think it's even worse. Yeah, that was Sunboy. What do you have for Sunburst?
So Sunburst is an older hero that's still trying to keep on to some level of mattering to the public. So he hires his services out to a cheap reality show that follows his adventures around and puts him into dangerous situations for their ratings.
I mean, he has that movie connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to fit that in. I hardly change anything. You know, I've been a fan of Sunburst since he first appeared in New Adventures of Superboy. He was cool then, I thought. So in Rocketed, I just consider him a Superman character already. He's a movie star in Japan, and he's a superhero. The twist I've given it is that the Sunburst persona started out as a character in a movie that Takao Sato played. When he got his powers, he started using them as a real-life Sunburst, but still didn't want anyone to know that it was him under the mask. So Sato is always actively griping about Sunburst, abusing the studio's trademarks, and so on. But tonally, big manga vibes, Ultraman, Super Sentai kind of stuff, a touch of Way of the House Husband in terms of silliness. Those who know, know. That's what I'm doing with Sunburst. But I quite like the character. I wish they'd done more with him, you know, over the years. Next up, Sun Devils. Well, this is our third space opera crew, and even further from the original concept. I'm really just repurposing the IP. The Sun Devils are entities that lived in Krypton's sun and whose existence was disrupted by the planet's explosion. So they fled. They went through that same warp that baby Kal-El did, and they found refuge inside our own sun. But they eventually found that the yellow energies were overpowering, and so they had to come to Earth and share their existence with human beings. Unfortunately, most of these Sun Devils merged with people who let themselves get corrupted by that power, and these are led by Rao himself, who was once worshipped by the Kryptonians. Only two entities merged with good people, a young couple who has to work out what this means for their relationship as they fight a two-person secret war as, I think you can guess it, Flamebird and Nightwing.
I went in a completely different direction from that. A group of friends get swept into a religious cult that worships a demon that is believed to live in the sun. After a ceremony goes wrong, the friends discover they can transform into demon-like creatures that possess powers and abilities they can barely control. Feeling betrayed, they go on the run, traveling from town to town, with the cult using the authorities to bring them back so that the power of the Sun Devils can be theirs.
I like that one. I mean, it's not that far from mine, and there's creatures inside the sun.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting story to tell. Next up is Super Chief.
Beginning the Superman-related characters getting their own series. This is the adventures of Perry White, who gains his superpowers from his super cigars.
Oh, no. Yes, I miss those super cigars.
Yeah. I could not use those, because I was like, you'll appreciate that the first time I read about that was in the Mayfair Superman source book. I was fascinated by the concept. As a post-crisis kid, I should have been repelled, and yet I found it intriguing. So this is basically Perry with Jimmy running in, like, behind him trying to clean up the mess that Perry creates, but kind of a comedy thing with Kurt Schaffenberger art.
Sure, sure. The first time I saw the cigars quite early, and I thought they were a bigger part of the Superman lore, because I had a comic in French translation that had Perry flying on it. So it was like a reprint of that story, basically. But I thought it was like a thing that happened all the time. It didn't. My Super Chief, it hardly changes anything. I take him from the entry. So I indeed get the pre-Columbus Native American series that I couldn't get with Strongbow. So that radioactive meteor, of course, it's a time-tossed piece of Krypton. So he thinks he's been blessed by his god. He can't fathom the science fiction origins of the rock that gives him his powers for 1 hour a day, just like the entry. But who's to say he's wrong? You know, how did that meteor get there in the first place? Maybe there is divine intervention. And in fact, we're not going to shy away from the supernatural in this series. The big twist is that these powers, at this time, can change the course of history. And they will. So we'll see Super Chief unite many tribes, eventually take the fight to the Europeans, and by then the readers will realize that the piece of Krypton crossed the multiversal boundaries and that they're now enjoying an alternate history series. It's like a Western, but it's going to surprise you in the end. Supergirl. Well, this is an easy one for me. Sterling Gates gets to continue what he was doing with Supergirl before the New 52. Interrupted, you know, and then made Supergirl kind of toxic for the next 12 years. So no more angry Supergirl. If we want a new status quo, we should hedge much closer to the TV series, I think. Make use of Cat Grant, make Supergirl her assistant. I like all of that. And bring back Streaky. That's non-negotiable. I guess I'm going to let Dr. Ange tell me if I was asking for the right things, but that's my very simple plan for Supergirl. What's yours?
I hope Dr. Ange forgives me on this one, because I'm taking a concept used for another character and tweaking it slightly. Supergirl, daughter of Atlantis. So instead of landing in modern-day America, Krypton blew up millennia ago, and she is sent to Earth, where she is found in ancient Atlantis and raised by Arion.
What?
She believes her powers are magic-based, because he's never told her about her origin, and when she finds out, that's where the complications start. But yeah, it's kind of a magic book with Supergirl.
Inspired by that Power Girl alternate origin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's interesting. Interesting remix. Does the explosion of Krypton taking place so long ago change what you do with the Superman books? What's your first one?
Oh, I am a huge fan of the Earth 2 Superman. So I am basically taking him in another direction sometime in the early 1950s in a battle with Alexei Luthor. Clark's powers get cut in half. So he's basically back to where he was at the very beginning, leaping an eighth of a mile, nothing short of a bursting shell, etc., etc. He tries to find a way to fight for justice the same way he had been, but his powers being halved complicate this until he hooks up with another similarly powered person named Iron Monroe, and they start hunting Nazi war criminals.
Jeez.
Superman Nazi Hunter.
Wow. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we get to do two Superman series, right? So
yes,
it would make sense to make one of them Action Comics. Instead, I'm choosing to keep Mark Waid's World's Finest around in my line.
Oh, yes.
Yes. These stories are from an earlier time. They star Batman and Robin, Dick Grayson Robin, and Superman and Supergirl. They're just delightful. I would change nothing. You know, I have story ideas to pitch the writer, like let's have Ace meet Crypto, a happy ending version of the Luthor Brainiac team up from Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow kind of thing, maybe composite Superman just to piss off Robin Chag. I don't have a lot on my editor's wish list, really, because I like how the series has been surprising. I think it's the best thing to come out of DC right now. You know, one of the best things, at least.
Oh, my God, yes. I am sorry I sat on that book for as long as I did.
Hey, as long as you discover it eventually, right? So yes. That's my first Superman. My second Superman is the main Superman book. So I just have him be the righteous dude from the Triangle Era, dealing with some of the things happening to a status quo because of the other books. Basically, Lois Lane's disappearance, Starfire's attentions, Jimmy becoming a superhero, kind of, Luthor moving house to Opal City, the tech infection running through Metropolis. You know, it's just big, bold adventure. And I quite like the New Dawn of DC issue of Superman that came out just recently. I have no interest in what's happening in Action Comics, however. But I think you could do a similar story from what they're doing now. You just continue on, basically. Luthor is whispering sweet nothings into Superman's ear, not from prison, but from the Opal. And instead of Lois as temporary editor-in-chief, maybe Ron Troop or somebody. You know, let's cater to that cast from the 90s because that's the one I love so. So basically, Superman is Superman. You know, I don't reinvent him. But I do wonder if the Superman expert does reinvent him.
Not really, but I take my favorite era and kind of turn it on its head. Martha and Jonathan Kent are up early one morning, and Jonathan is busting Martha's chops about her scrapbook, and he is shocked when he sees a headline, "Space Plane Crashes, Lois Lane Dead." And they hear something upstairs, and you find out that Clark did not go to see the space plane land. He was doing something else, so he was not there to save her. And this is what inspires him to become Superman. But he also starts poking around and finds out that the plane that crashed into the space plane to cause it to crash has connections to a criminal organization known as Intergang. And breaking that story, which is the first story arc, is what gets him the job at the Daily Planet. So it's the post-crisis Superman, except Lois died.
So really, a real reboot. Because yes. That's going to change everything.
That it changes it. Like, he still becomes Superman, but more out of guilt. Like, I should have done something. But I also wanted to play up, because Byrne did this, play up him as a reporter. And so I like the idea that maybe there was something nefarious behind that plane, and that's what gets him at the Daily Planet instead of his interview with Superman.
Which is a little fluff piece.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Very intriguing. Now let's leave the Superman mythos behind. Well, not me. I keep the Superman mythos all along, but Swamp Thing, that's a very different series.
So it is the year 2345, and there is, much like the Argo from the Supergirl series, a section of the Louisiana Bayou preserved in space. And a researcher develops this plant type thing. I didn't really break it down. Basically, it's the origin of Swamp Thing, but in space, where Swamp Thing comes alive, thinks that he's like on a planet, but he's really on a barren rock and has to figure out what that actually means for him. But basically, the high concept is Swamp Thing in space.
I think we've done that in a role-playing game. It's like in the future, and the Swamp Thing was part of the cast, sort of hopping planets kind of thing. Here, I imagine the new Swamp Thing is a packet of Kryptonian seeds sent into space by Jor-El before Krypto, before Kal. He just wanted to see what happens to vegetable matter in space. You know, normal science. But the ship fell into that space warp. That's how Jor-El discovered it existed at all. Well, it eventually crashes into the Louisiana Bayou, And the explosion creates an open wound in the Phantom Zone. It's all the same technology. Right there in the swamp. The accident makes the Green decide that the area needs its own protector. It's clear that I'm stealing this Man-Thing and the Nexus of Realities, you know, but DC style. It combines the Kryptonian seeds with one of the first escapees from the Phantom Zone, forcing him to stay there as Krypton's plant elemental. The character longs to leave, but is unable to until the Parliament decides he's done enough to keep the other Phantom Zone inmates out. But there's other weird stuff in the Phantom Zone as well. Monstrous things. So this is a supercharged swamp monster comic that is as weird as we can make it, with a lead who has a lot to atone for.
I'm gonna admit right now, I had fun coming up with my concepts. Yours sing so much better than mine do. I mean, mine are fun.
I have experience.
Yeah, I was about to say, but then I was thinking about it. I was like, this guy has been doing role-playing games for like 40 years, probably. So
35. Now, don't make me older than I am. I don't know that my games are as imaginative. I don't know. I have to fully admit, Michael, that maybe this second half of the project, it's been tough. I feel like I've done everything. I've tried every permutation. And I'm very often, it's like, oh, this is the obvious idea, but I've kind of done it before for something else in another episode. So I try not to repeat myself. And in this case, the whole inspiration is the name of your show. You know, it all comes back to Superman. And I decided, let's do that and see what happens. And it just came out of me. I mean, I did not have any trouble with these ones. It's nice to have like a strong theme that I can actually...
I appreciate that, and you did a fantastic job. Yours are comic book series that could last into several years worth of stories. Mine sound like the lineup of ABC, CBS, and NBC from the 1970s, and you see all of these people now at like conventions doing photo ops and signing autographs.
But by design.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're left with the bonus book, if we had one. Mine was Steel Claw. So Steel Claw is a vigilante operating out of Suicide Slum, which has grown darker since the coming of the tech. Because it used to be the slum was just like the bad side of town. But now it's essentially under Metropolis. It's under all those elevated roadways and in the shadow of those buildings that reach for the sky. So Steel Claw is a violent vigilante by night, using his tech claws to rip criminals to shreds. But by day, he's on Metropolis's city council. He's fighting for his neighborhood. So I like that there's a political side to this as well, to keep the subplots alive. So kind of a hyper-violent take on the Green Hornet in a way, you know, like there's the two identities. I felt like Superman is the template for my line. So a lot of the books are lighter as a result, you know. So I wanted to have like this darker book. Did you have a bonus book?
Steppenwolf, Master of Metal.
Okay.
Where Steppenwolf comes to 1970s America and discovers the metal scene, Ozzy's group, Led Zeppelin, which, people argue is metal, and basically becomes a record producer. And it's kind of not a romance book, but it's not like an adventure book. It's not a superhero book. It's more of just the stories of the bands that he creates and how he uses his apocalyptic technology to basically ensure their success.
Very weird. I like books that are based on music, even though comics can't really do music per se.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always liked that kind of stuff. All right. So finally, we'll follow the well-established tradition that states that we have enough money to buy one series from the other editor's line. Which one will it be?
Oh, I'm buying your Steelbook. I will support John Henry Irons any way I possibly can.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I love that character so much. He is the favorite of that Reign of the Superman quartet. And I think he is the one that has the most potential that DC has squandered.
Squandered is right. No, exactly. I mean, he's been ill-served.
Anybody who wants to make a go of him, I'm going to give you my money. So, yeah, that's my choice.
Ultimately, I chose your Superman book. I'm intrigued by the what if here.
Ah.
But, yeah, for a while it was, I think my top three were that one, Super Chief, because I love a humor series, and The Suicide Squad. Like I said, big sucker for time travel shenanigans and stuck in a loop, time loops. Love that. So that was all very interesting to me. But ultimately, look, if the line has been created, crafted by the Superman expert of our podcasting community, you know, our own larger circle, then yeah, I got to buy a Superman book. That's all there is to it. Dear listeners, it's time to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com and tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? If you were in charge, what series would you offer using these characters? And if you like this content, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FW podcasts, like Diablo Frank, who sponsors this show. I hope you had fun, Michael.
I had a ball. No, it was cool getting to talk with you again, because we haven't done this in
over a year.
God, since, was it the Quick Bunny?
Yeah, the Quick Bunny, Fire and Water team up. Superman and the Quick Bunny.
But yeah.
A classic.
A stone cold classic written by Mike Curlin. So, but it was a lot of fun.
Tell the people what you're working on right now. What can we expect from your side of the podcasts?
From Crisis to Crisis is coming back because I've actually recorded a bunch of episodes in advance to kind of try to stay ahead. We're about to tackle Final Night. And then two episodes after that, The Wedding. So it's big doings over on From Crisis to Crisis. Andy and I are still doing the Overlooked Dark Knight, where we talk about Batman books that people hardly ever talk about. Most of the time, that's what we do. I'm sure the Superman and Lois tapes are coming back soon. We're just trying to schedule those since the new series. And if you want to read stuff that I have put instead of listen, The Old Origin Changeth. It's a book of essays about how certain comic book characters, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, and a couple others, how their origins have evolved over the years. And I wrote the one about Batman. So I spent a good 3 or 4 days reading about the Waynes getting shot over and over again. That's not good for your mental health.
A lot of pearls.
But it was a fun essay. Yeah, a lot of pearls. And you can find that at Amazon.
Awesome. Check that out, people. Well, thanks for trying the experiment with me. Until next time, who's editing?
We are.
How do we know the kryptonite can kill Superman? So I came up with the idea that it was the pregnant Lara who was sent to Earth. She gives birth to Kal-El on Earth, and then she's exposed to kryptonite and dies. And that's how we know. And Jeanette Kahn thought that was maybe a little too radical, and she suggested that what if the core of Krypton was already turning into kryptonite? So even before he leaves, people are dying. And I said, well, that's brilliant.